Hey, welcome to church, everybody. Happy Father's Day weekend to all of you. We are in the second to last week of our series, A Good and Beautiful Life, looking at the virtues that the Spirit is going to bring and is bringing up in our lives. I want to actually remind you of a few of the verses leading up to this passage. And here in Galatians 5, 19 to 21, here's what Paul says. The acts, or you could understand this, the works of the flesh are obvious. And the flesh here, through the New Testament, is the idea of our carnal life apart from trust in Jesus. So here's what comes naturally to somebody who is not saved, who does not know Jesus and is not filled by the Spirit. The works or acts of the flesh are obvious. And here's the laundry list: sexual immorality, impurity, debauchery, adultery, witchcraft, hatred, discord, jealousy, fits of rage, selfish ambitions, dissensions, factions, envy, drunkenness, orgies, and the like. Woohoo! This is kind of the laundry list here. The acts of the flesh, the works of the flesh. Think of the works of the flesh like a machine. Think of a factory. And a factory and machines, what do? They produce things. That's their job, is they produce all of these things. And so the machine of the flesh, or the production of the flesh, they're obvious. Those are the things that are going to happen. And a machine cannot produce life. And so think about your coffee machine. Your coffee machine is going to produce coffee. That is what it's supposed to do. But your coffee machine will never produce an apple. Your coffee machine will never produce a cherry. It's impossible. That's what a machine does. In order to produce a fruit, an apple, what do you need? You need life. You need a tree. And so this is what brings us, and the contrast, where the works of the flesh are this, the fruit of the Spirit are these things: love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. We are looking at the virtue of gentleness this weekend. A machine will produce these things. How do you produce life? The person who produces life is the Spirit, and these things are the good and beautiful life. And so this is going to make sense for some of you, why you can't change. You're like, man, how do I change with my fits of rage, my selfish ambition, my envy of all of the Instagram moms and their lives? How do I change the dissensions in my family? How do I get over my alcohol addiction? This is the machine of sin, and that's what it's going to do. But the hope of Christianity, the hope of the gospel of Jesus, is that there's a fruit of the Spirit as we align ourselves with Jesus, that he brings us life and he brings us the good and beautiful life. And so, as I said, we're looking at gentleness this weekend. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to ask, what is it? How is God gentle? What does it look like? And how is it grown, or how is it cultivated in our lives? I want to define gentleness for us. Let me tell you first what it's not. Here's what gentleness is not. Gentleness is not personality, right? Automatically, when we think of this virtue, we think of the calm, quiet, maybe more passive person. They're the gentle ones. You know, the people whose voices are loud, or the extroverts, they're not gentle. It's more the introverts that are gentle. That is not what this is talking about at all, because both the introvert and the extrovert, the loud and the quiet, both need this virtue. It is not strictly just personality. It is also not like a stoic approach to life. And Stoicism was a school of philosophy before the time of Jesus. And what Stoics believed was, we just kind of keep this equilibrium in our life. We don't get too passionate. We don't get too angry. We want to always kind of live here in the middle. We don't want to get too high or too low. And so sometimes we view gentleness as somebody who doesn't really care a lot, right? Somebody who kind of just meanders through life with a haphazard nature. That's not what gentleness is. Also, it's not a weakness. In our society, you know, for some of you, maybe think about somebody maybe in the trades who likes to hunt, who likes watching NASCAR. I don't know. But sometimes we view gentleness as like, I don't need that. That's not me. You know, no, it's actually not a weakness. We're going to see that this is actually needed. necessary and beautiful for a fully functioning and flourishing life. It's not a weakness. And finally, it is not this idea of being a nice Christian. Like if you're checking a church out, checking Christianity out, you're interested, you're kind of seeking, sometimes, and maybe not as much anymore, especially post-COVID, but sometimes the view of Christians is that we're just nice people. We're just very gentle people. We sit down and we sing songs. We hold hands. We greet each other with holy kisses and nice hugs. We sing songs about loving Jesus and dancing in gardens. I don't know. But that's kind of the view sometimes, right? That's not what we're talking about when we talk about this virtue of gentleness. What is gentleness? Here's what it is. It's a beautiful cocktail of three things. The first thing is humility. Gentle people are humble people. And humble people are the types that have nothing to prove and nothing to lose. Humble people don't get defensive because there's nothing to prove. They have an adequate view of themselves in our world. The biblical language is that they don't think too highly of themselves. They don't think more highly of themselves than they ought. Sometimes we think about humble people as the people who think of themselves very poorly. That's not it either. But humble people have a very accurate view of who they are in God's great and grand world. These people, gentleness flourishes with humble people because humility is the garden in which gentleness flourishes. Because if you think of a proud person, you think of a person who's aggressive, you think of a person who operates in a defensive mode all the time, it's hard to be gentle when you're always proving yourself. It's hard to be gentle when you're trying to convince everybody else about how great you are. So humility is kind of the first ingredient in this gentleness recipe. The second one is a word, forbearance. And the word forbearance we don't use a whole lot, but so let me work with this a little bit. Forbearance is a proper restraint of anger or power out of a consideration of the other person. It's a restraint of anger or power or even of desire. Why? In consideration of the other person. So you see how that works? Humble people consider others more valuable than themselves, right? That's humility. And out of humility flows forbearance. The idea that I'm actually not going to get my way. I'm not going to make a point. I'm not going to speak out. Why? Because I consider you and your opinion and your insight and your experience on par with mine. This is forbearance. And sometimes with forbearance, we think that, well, to operate in this way, there's no conflict or confrontation. That's not it either. But forbearance means that in that confrontation and in that conflict, there is an extraordinary amount of care and love and commitment to the other person. So what I'm not advocating for with gentleness and the idea of forbearance is that we don't get into it. No, but when we get into it, it's different. It's seasoned with gentleness, which flows from humility, and then secondly, forbearance. The third ingredient in this cocktail is the idea of meekness. Meekness, it's one of the Beatitudes that Jesus talks about in Matthew 5. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Meekness, I love this definition that I found this week. The definition of meekness, listen to this, is strength under control, tinged with care. Strength under control, tinged with care. I love that because sometimes, again, with meekness, it's like people who don't really look you in the eye, you know, they got nothing to say, they're not passionate about anything. No. A meek person is strength under control, tinged with care. Man, when these three things come together, humility, forbearance, and meekness, what flows out of that is gentleness. Gentleness is meekness in real time. I'll say that again. Gentleness is meekness in real time, strength under control, tinged with the spirit of care. This is what it means to be gentle. This story may be helpful. I have shared this with you before, but I think it's just a beautiful picture of this. Sir Edmund Hillary, he was knighted after he summited Everest in 1953. All right. He won a whole bunch of awards, was distinguished. In 1995, he received the High British Award, the highest British award, the Order of the Garter. On one of his trips back to the Himalayas, I mean, the guy's legendary status, summited Everest in 1953. One of his trips back to the Himalayas, a group of hikers and climbers recognize him and say, "Hey, can we get a picture with you?" So Edmund Hillary says, "Absolutely." So he's setting up this picture with all these climbers, and he's in the middle, and the photographer is about to take the picture. Another climber who's watching this happen, not recognizing Edmund Hillary, sees that Edmund Hillary is holding an ice pick, but he's holding it incorrectly. This hiker, climber, not knowing who Edmund Hillary was, decides to give this man who summited Everest a free lesson on how to hold the ice pick. So before the picture is taken, he says, "Oh, you're holding that wrong." And he comes up and he rearranges the ice pick. All of the other climbers have their jaws open about what is happening. Do you realize who this man is? Think about what Edmund Hillary could have done. Could have lashed out at this person. Are you kidding me? Who are you, you little puke, you little pipsqueak? Who are you that you would tell me how to hold this ice pick after all that I've done and all that I am? Instead, Edmund Hillary thanks the man for his correction and tells the other person to take a picture. That is humility, forbearance, and meekness. The idea that, you know, Edmund Hillary has nothing to prove. He did great things, he has nothing to prove. Why? Because he's humble. Forbearance, a restraint because of care, right? And meekness, strength under control. That is gentleness in real time. And this is what our world needs. So that is what gentleness is. How is God gentle? How is God gentle? I could go a lot of places. What I want to do is I want to take you to a place where Jesus actually talks about himself. He describes his own ministry. Lots of the New Testament is going to describe Jesus, but this is a moment where Jesus describes himself and his ministry. It's really well known and it's beautiful. One of my favorite invitations of Jesus where he says, "Come to me." It starts with this beautiful invitation. Come to me. Here is the invitation of Jesus to you and to me, an invitation. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, all you who have lived through a pandemic, all of you who are living with high inflation, all of you, and I will give you rest. This is a promise. The invitation leads to a promise. I'm going to give you rest. You tired pilgrim, you tired Canadian, come to me. I'm going to give you rest. He says, "Take my yoke upon you." This is an interesting phrase because a yoke is actually a farming tool. It's an instrument of work. Here's what Jesus is saying. Those of you who are tired, come to me and I will give you a farming instrument, a farming tool. So you would think actually what tired people need is a mattress, not a yoke. But Jesus here is saying, look, you have a yoke on you from the world. And the yoke is do more, be more, prove yourself, be aggressive, all these things. That is the yoke of the world that you are working in. I have a different way of doing life. What you need is not a mattress. What you need is a new way to be human, a new way to do life. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. This is a teacher's statement. Learn from me. Take my teaching. The yoke is his teaching, his ministry, and his person. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me as your teacher. Why? Because I'm gentle and I'm humble in heart. He finishes this, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke, teaching, ministry, person is easy and my burden is light. My way of doing life is better than what you are experiencing because with me working with you in your life, there's a new reality you can experience. But I want to just focus in on this. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I'm gentle and humble. Why should you yoke yourself, align yourself with Jesus? Why should you learn from him? Because he's gentle and he's humble in heart. All great teachers have extremely great content. They have something to say. They have an insight that needs to be developed, an insight that needs to be heard, but it doesn't end there. Why? Because great teachers don't just have great content, they have great love. And Jesus here, the reason why we should learn from him is because he, unlike the other teachers of his day, is gentle and humble in heart. What Jesus is doing here is he's contrasting himself with the Pharisees. The Pharisees' yoke, their teaching is burdensome. Other places, Jesus actually insults the Pharisees because he says something like, they put hard and heavy burdens on you and they don't even lift a finger to help you. In other words, their yoke is heavy, it's burdensome, and they don't give a rip. But I do. Learn from me as the teacher. Why? Because unlike the Pharisees, I'm gentle and I'm humble in heart. One of my favorite professors that I had during my undergrad theology degree, his name was Bill McAlpine. Bill, fantastic, great mind, reflective, pastorally. He taught me my first class in homiletics of how to do this stuff. I love Bill McAlpine. Why? Because he had something to say. But Bill McAlpine also loved me. That he had a character and a presence about him that was safe for me as a student. It was safe for me to learn from him. Why? Because I knew that not only did he have something to say, but he actually loved me. And this is what Jesus is saying. Learn from me. Why? Because of his gentleness, his humility. Here's what Jesus is saying about himself. Is that at the very core of who Jesus is, when you mine all the way down to the deepest part of who Jesus Christ is, he is gentle and humble in heart. When you get to his deepest part, this is what you get. Now, here's what this means, is that Jesus is not trigger happy with you. He doesn't look at you with disgust and say, are you kidding me? You still don't get it. What's wrong with you? He doesn't lash out in anger. He isn't harsh. He isn't easily exasperated. Like, you're dealing with that again? At the deepest parts of Jesus, he deals with us with gentleness and humility. And I love this, especially if you are new to the faith or you're seeking and you're wanting a better yoke, a better way to do life. Because life in our secular world is leaving you stressed, lonely, and anxious. And Jesus comes to you today and he says, come to me. There's an invitation and a promise. I'm going to give you rest from all of that stuff. There's a new way to do life when you align and learn from me, my teachings, my ministry, my personhood. Why? Because at the very heart of Jesus for you is one of love and gentleness and humility. And man, this is such a game changer, because if you're in this cycle of shame and guilt and production and performance for Jesus as a Christian, his approach to you is one of gentleness. Like, here's what that means, is that you are harder on yourself than Jesus is of you and of me. And I know in my apprenticeship to Jesus, if I believed that at the core of who I was, so much of my life would change. When you get to the core of Jesus, you get gentleness and humility. My question for you is, when you get to the core of who you are, what do you see? What do you get? Gentleness? Or frustration? The goal of Christianity is that we become like Jesus, gentle and humble in heart. The works of the flesh will not give that to you. The machine of sin will not give it to you, but life in the Spirit, who's going to be introducing you to Jesus daily, this is what can be yours. So what does this look like? What does this gentleness and humility look like in your life? What does it look like? I have four four different moments or four different places of application. I don't want to be too instructive here, but I think, especially here on Father's Day weekend, what does it look like for men and fathers to lead up to and experience this virtue of gentleness? So let me speak to you fathers, men here as you're tuning in. In the ancient world, to be a man, and what I mean by the ancient world is like first century Roman Empire, to be a man meant dominance and power. You did not at all want to show any signs of weakness. If you did win, if you were successful, you wanted everybody to know it was about power, it was about dominance, it was about being strong, that real men were winners. That was in the ancient world. I want to suggest to you that not much has changed. In our modern world, to be a man generally seems like it's the same thing. You need to be strong. If you win, you let everybody know. Signs of weakness or emotion is not necessary and ignored at all costs. Emotional language, no. So the idea for fathers, for men to be gentle may be a little disgusting or revolting for us, especially in our modern world. In our modern world, there's a phrase that's being used a lot these days, and the phrase is toxic masculinity. Toxic masculinity. There's an article in the Boston Globe a few years ago, and the title of the article was this: Why the Male Gender is in Serious Need of Rebranding. And that article just flows of information and insights of how the contemporary, the modern idea of masculinity has gone so off the rails. In the New York Times, an article about toxic masculinity, they define toxic masculinity in three ways. The first way is this, that toxic masculinity means that men suppress emotions or masking distress. So emotional language of fear or hurt or woundedness, no, that's not what men do. Why? Because we suppress emotions and we mask distress. Secondly, what does it mean, toxic masculinity mean? It means that we maintain, or these men, toxic men, I hope I'm not one, maintain an appearance of hardness. This is a stiff upper lip, right? Funerals, you don't cry. Weddings, you don't cry. The birth of a baby, you don't cry. The declaring bankruptcy, you don't cry. Why? Because you have to maintain an appearance of hardness, tough all the time. Thirdly, the New York Times defined toxic masculinity as violence as an indicator of power. It's about violence. So you don't feel anything, you're hard all the time, and you lash out in aggression. And I think as we watch our world, when you see acts of violence, oftentimes, not all the time, I'm not suggesting that, but oftentimes, the people behind these acts of violence and aggression are men in the first half of life. And this is toxic masculinity where we live right now. So toxic masculinity is yelling, violence, aggression. It's primal desires being celebrated. So toxic masculinity, cat calls to women because they're objects for my pleasure, not people made in the image of God. It's misogyny, looking down on females. It's anger. This is the cultural climate of the state of masculinity. And yet here we are on Father's Day weekend with this virtue of gentleness. And Jesus comes as the greatest man who has ever lived, who is passionate about justice, who called things out when they were wrong, who demonstrated strength as God, but under control, never an angry word, never a jarring note, loving those on the margins, humble, meek. He practiced forbearance with those around him. Jesus here, for men, for fathers, this weekend, shows the virtue of gentleness, and this is what men need more than ever. Strength under control, meekness, humility, forbearance, and gentleness. Men, fathers, how would your world change relationally? In your work, in your families, if this was exhibited in your life in more and more measures. Secondly, leaders, quickly, if you lead something, a family, a home, an organization, an initiative, how are you stewarding your power? Would people describe you as being gentle? Here's a litmus test. If you're unsure as a leader, people who report to you, your subordinates, whatever. Here's a litmus test for you. Do those who report to you, when was the last time those who reported to you sat you down and told you the truth? Like something hard. Like, when you do this, I feel like this. Or when you don't reply to that email, this is what happens. When was the last time you as a leader had somebody in your organization, initiative, family, whatever it is, sit you down and tell you the truth? If you can't remember the last time, it may be, I'm not connecting it, but it may be true that you don't come across gentle, therefore you are not approachable, so people don't actually sit down and tell you the truth. Thirdly, enemies. There are people tuning in. You are in conflict. You're grinding through it. It's online. It's in your home. It's at work. You're grinding through that person. Maybe they're persecuting you. Maybe there's a conflict. But here is gentleness for you this weekend. That the fruit of the Spirit of gentleness will transform your current conflict moment with that person you're at odds with that person who may be even an enemy with. It transforms how we interact with those who disagree, oppose, or persecute us, that we repay their hostility with gentleness. Now, what that doesn't mean, remember, it does not mean that we don't truth tell. It does not mean that we don't confront. It does not mean that we're too afraid to enter into the conflict. That's not what I'm saying. But as we do so full of the Spirit and the fruit of gentleness, that we cast our ideas, we couch our language and our position and our perspective in a spirit of forbearance, which considers other people. So sometimes you need to get into it, but we do so with gentleness. And then finally, parents. I am one, whether you are parenting older adults or younger kids, I think this fruit of gentleness would transform so much of your relationship with your kids. So much. I want to tell you two stories over the last little while that I've got wrong, right? As I think about my life, gentleness, I don't think is something that somebody would automatically describe me as. Maybe you kind of get that from this. You know, I'm pretty loud. I'm pretty forward. I'm not good at this. So this past week, I dropped my four-year-old off at preschool, right? I had a day. So I dropped my four-year-old off, then I come to work, and I got a day. It's packed, boom, 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 lots of things going on. So my four-year-old kind of gets shy sometimes, or she enjoys it, but she's a little bit unsure for the first few minutes. And oftentimes, I'm gentle. Hey, you know, girly, it's okay. Daddy's here. I give her a hug, and I leave. This past Wednesday, I dropped her off. She was having one of those moments. And instead of being gentle with my four-year-old, I prized my own schedule more than this moment. And I left in a spirit of anger, and I left her, and she was upset. And I think back at that moment, you know, there's sometimes as a parent, you know, your four-year-old's kind of having a temper tantrum. You got to draw some hard lines and move on. This wasn't one of those moments though, because I knew that in my heart, I actually had anger. And I just wanted to get her away from me and move on to my day. Man, as a dad and as a parent, there's an opportunity for me to exhibit patience, forbearance, meekness, and humility in that moment with my four-year-old, to get down at her level and to tell her that she's loved, to tell her that everything's going to be okay. I didn't do any of that. Secondly, about a month ago, I'm watching the news with my wife and my oldest daughter, and one of the journalists comes on. She's doing a story, introducing the story, and I make some sort of vain, harsh, critical comment of her hair. It's terrible. It was just like, I said something along the lines of like, you know, you'd think when you are in front of thousands of people, you could afford a good haircut. All right, that's what I said. It wasn't nice. It was harsh, and it was critical. A few weeks ago, we're watching the news again with my wife and my oldest daughter. The same journalist comes up on the screen. I don't say anything, but you know who says something? My daughter. She says the same thing. You'd think being on TV that you could afford a good haircut or do your hair better or something like that. And I sat there and I was like, oh, she learned that from me. A harsh, critical spirit. She got that from me. So it's not just in my interactions with my kids. It's actually as they see me interact with the world. And so as parents, what does it look like for you to inhabit, abide in the spirit and be gentle? Be gentle. So lastly, how is this cultivated? How is this fruit cultivated in your life? I want to first say that the good and beautiful life of love and joy and peace and patience and goodness, faithfulness, kindness, gentleness, and self-control, these nine things you want. And you don't want some of them, you want all of them. So oftentimes when we get this, especially in our Western culture that's just fascinated with achievement, it's like, all right, what have I got to do? Read this book, do that thing. Here's the thing, is that the fruit of the Spirit is not achieved, it's received. The fruit of the Spirit is not achieved, it is received. And so how do you get this? How is this cultivated in your life? How are any of these virtues cultivated in your life? It's received. How? By learning from Jesus, by taking his yoke upon you, by understanding that the secular world in which you live is not delivering on the promises. The secular script is not delivering on its promises of progress and fulfillment and flourishing. It simply is not, and it will not, because it cannot. This is the machine of sin, the world of sin that we live in, and it will not give you what you want. I'm telling you, it will not give you what you want. But here is the beauty, is that there's another way to do life. Then another yoke to take on yourself. Not the yoke of the world, but the yoke of Jesus as you learn from him. The invitation is come to me. Come to me. It doesn't matter who you are. Come to Jesus. Come to Jesus. If you're de-churched, you attended once, but you don't anymore. If you're a skeptic, if you're an atheist, if you're addicted, come to me, all of you. It's beautiful. The invitation, come to me and I will give you rest. This is a promise. How is this cultivated? It's cultivated by surrendering your life to Jesus Christ. Learn from me. Why would you learn from him? Because he is gentle and he is humble in heart. He wants more and more and more of you. He's fascinated with you. He loves you more than you love yourself. He knows you better than you know yourself, and he still loves you. He doesn't shake his hands at you. He doesn't wave his finger at you. He has open arms towards you. It is not achieved. It is received. So that's what I want to do. I want to invite you to receive Jesus this weekend. It's a simple trust transfer from this to that. You know what? Jesus, I don't have all the answers, but here's what I do know. I do know that this isn't working, and there's something more and better, that I'm living in this machine, and this machine is still producing the same things. I need life. I need your life. So to accept Christ is this simple idea that you make a trust transfer. You acknowledge, man, I live in a sinful machine. I have all the fits of rage, the frustration, the anger, all those things. That's what comes naturally to me, but I need life and I need your life. It's a confession and an acceptance of all that Jesus has done for you by dying on the cross and rising again. So if that's you, man, I want to plead with you to make that decision, to do something about that, to take that next step. It doesn't mean that everything's figured out. It doesn't mean that your life gets easier. It doesn't mean all that changes immediately. But the promise is that you now have the Spirit of God, because as you accept Christ, Jesus, it fills you with his Spirit. It is not achieved. It is received. That's the first step. How is it cultivated? You need to know Jesus. But I think there are some perspectives that we can adopt. I want to just show you really quickly in Psalm 37. For those of you who love Jesus, follow Jesus, you want to reflect on this. You want to do some devotions and journaling about this week. This is great for you. In Psalm 37, how do you cultivate gentleness, trust, delight, and hope in the Lord? Let me show you quickly. It's trust in the Lord. This is how Psalm 37:3, trust in the Lord and do good. Do good. Don't do evil, do good. Trust in the Lord. As we trust in the Lord, we continue to do good even in the face of pressure, anger, and injustice. Even when we're angry, when things rile up within us, that we still are gentle because we trust in the Lord that he will make things right. Then it says, dwell in the land and enjoy safe pasture. Secondly, that's trust. Secondly, take delight in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. The idea here is that satisfied people don't need anything more. Like, imagine living your life satisfied and content, not pining, not envying, not angry, not frustrated, but deeply content. Think about yourself after Thanksgiving dinner. You've just eaten tons of food and somebody comes up, hey, do you want something more? No, I don't need it. I'm full, thank you. I'm satisfied. When satisfied people are gentle people because they're not looking for anything else. This is how gentleness is cultivated. Take delight in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord, trust in him, and he will do this. He will make your righteous reward shine like the dawn, your vindication like the noonday sun. Be still before the Lord, and here is it, and wait patiently. This is hope. Hope. Hope for him. Do not fret when people succeed in their ways, when they carry out their wicked schemes. Don't do that. Why? Because your hope is in the Lord. The future vindication, that conflict situation, your terrible parenting moment, your leadership, whatever it is, we hope in the Lord that we maintain a gentle posture as we know that God is sovereign and will enact justice. We hope, wait patiently for him. Do not fret when people succeed in their ways, when they carry out their wicked schemes. My friends, how do you cultivate this? Is you trust, delight, and hope in the Lord from Psalm 37. So my final question for you this weekend is this. Where does this fruit of gentleness need to be lived out and expressed in your life? For the sake of the kingdom of God, and as you abide in Jesus by his Spirit. So Lord, meet us this weekend. I want to pray for the fathers, for the men listening in. Lord, I pray that by your Spirit we'd be transformed, that through this church and in this church and in the families of this church, that we would have men who are formed in the image of Christ, that the ideas of toxic masculinity would be so far from how you would describe the men and fathers of our church. For the leaders, for the parents, for people in conflict situations. Lord, I pray that we would be a church that would be bold, passionate, willing to go to the messy places, but do so in a spirit of humility, forbearance, meekness, and gentleness. These are the things, Lord, that we cannot achieve, but we do ask by your Spirit we receive. In your name we pray. Amen. Bless you. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.